This is, I believe, going to be, well, it's going to be the first of, might be a few hearings on this issue. It's certainly a serious issue to all Minnesotans. And the reason we don't have, I think we've got enough to talk about already today. We don't have Northwest Airlines here or Congressman Oberstar because Congressman Oberstar had a conflict, and then Northwest, the pilots thing and other issues, it's ongoing working situation. So we thought the timing on the airline, at least Northwest, was probably not right today, but they will be here. In my judgment, this has been pretty much of a two-way street for all Minnesotans. I think Northwest Airlines has been good to us as a state. And quite frankly, we've been good to Northwest Airlines. In 92, I think it was a $790 million, some call it a bailout, but whatever you want to call it, we helped there and kept them alive and kept them going and kept the discussion moving. And certainly there's about, I believe, about 11,500 jobs in Minnesota. I learned the other day that about 2,000 are out in the district I represent, which is South St. Paul, Eagan, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, and Lilydale, and Invergrove Heights. So you can see where it's a – personally, it's a big, very big concern of mine. But I said earlier, you know, we've been there to help Northwest grow jobs. We've been there to help to protect jobs, and we just want to know what's going on. So where this is not, I said it on Almanac or somewhere, that we're not out, or I'm not out, and I'm sure the committee members agree with me, we're not out for a witch hunt or anything like that. We just want to know what's going on. Are people going to still be working here? Obviously, there are a lot of ancillary jobs that might not stay here, and we want to know about that. That's, for example, the food service and the food isn't that much as it with Northwest anymore, but okay, that was supposed to be kind of a little joke, but it didn't register. I don't even know if you get food anymore. On,
you got to pay for the
peanuts. But you can think about what I said, then you could laugh or something. But anyway, this is a very, very, there you go. This is a very serious situation for all of us. And we've got a, like I said, Northwest is not coming in today, but we do have a prepared statement there. I've talked to the president a couple of times lately. He's been very friendly, very easy to do the visit with, Stealing, and he will or somebody will be coming in soon, but I'm sure there's a story to be told there. But he did send a statement, and also there's somebody from Alana Peterson, Director of Field Operations for Congressman Oberstar, is here. And with that, I think, and then after that, we'll talk about the Duluth agreements, state involvement with Commissioner McElroy, and then we'll hear from the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So, Brian, would you like to read? I think it's in the file here, but you could, for the record, we want to read a statement from Northwest Airlines.
Dear Chairman Metzen, Northwest Airlines understands the Senate Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee is holding a hearing to discuss the news reported in various media outlets about possible consolidation within the airline industry. Based on the jurisdiction of your committee, you and your colleagues know better than anyone that strong air service is essential for any state which is competing in a global economy. The issue of consolidation is one which elected officials must study and fully understand. NWA knows that Minnesotans care very much about our Twin Cities hub and the jobs in Minnesota produced by our airline operations. We're grateful for their support. Our objective in the volatile and uncertain economic environment in which airlines operate has been and continues to be the long-term survival of the hub at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, the Minnesota jobs we support. As representatives of NWA have discussed with you and your staff, the merger speculation reported in the media over the past few few weeks and months continues to be a subject on which we cannot comment. If at a future time events occur that Northwest Airlines is permitted to discuss, then we would be happy to appear before your committee to participate in a constructive dialogue at that time. Thank you once again to both you and your colleagues on the Senate Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee for your interest in this important issue to Minnesota. Sincerely, Richard B. Hurst, Senior Vice President, Corporate Affairs and Administration.
Okay. So what we'll hear from Alana. She here from, thank you for coming. And our staff, as Alana knows and others know, we've been in contact with the good congressman's office maybe six or eight times, and he shares obviously the same concerns that all of us on this committee do, and but he was unable to make it today, but I'm sure at a later date he assured me that he will come if he can make it. Thank you for coming.
Yes, and he apologized for not making it today. I'm Alana Peterson, the Director of Field Operations for the Congressman Oberstar. I'm going to read his statement for you here. Thank you for the opportunity to share my concerns with you today regarding a potential Delta Northwest or United Continental merger, which I believe would hurt Minnesota and the rest of the country. The immediate impact of a Northwest Delta merger would be felt in Minneapolis, as it is likely that the headquarters of the new airline would be in Atlanta, and there would be a possible reduction in hub operations at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. However, even if issues associated with the impact of Minnesota are resolved, the merging of two major airlines would not be good for the rest of the country. A decrease in competition would likely produce higher fares and less service throughout the land. Mergers in the airline industry are nothing new. Most of the carriers flying today are the products of one or more mergers over the past three decades. Yet, this latest round of rumored mergers, which included a United Continental scenario as well as a Delta Northwest combination, is significant. It would mean further consolidation in the airline industry, further reductions in choice for consumers, and probably fewer flights, fewer jobs, and higher fares. Congress deregulated the airline industry in 1978. Prior to that date, airlines had to get federal approval for fares and routes from the Civil Aeronautics Board. Deregulation lifted those restrictions and allowed the marketplace, not the government, to determine where an airline flies and how much it charges to take you there. Deregulation held out the promise of a market-driven industry that would give rise to a host of new entrants, bringing more competition, lower fares, and better service. The immediate aftermath of deregulation saw the expected flurry of airline startups and new market service. That activity, however, was short-lived. MSP, for instance, only has two low-cost carriers, AirTran Airways and Sun Country Airlines. The mid-80s experienced the first round of merger mania in the airline industry as the bigger fish began devouring the smaller ones. Delta bought Western, Northwest swallowed Republic, US Air bought Piedmont, Frank Lorenzo merged Texas International and New York Air with Continental and People Express, then bought once proud Eastern, which faded into bankruptcy. Airlines that did not grow withered. Others tried to grow too fast and imploded. Pan Am, for so many years, America's flagship and international carrier, merged with National. TWA, another U.S. carrier with a strong overseas trade, bought Ozark. Pan Am sold its Prime Pacific route to United. Carl Icahn bought TWA, sold its prize asset, the London Heathrow route, to American. Now TWA has been absorbed by American, and Pan Am is just a memory. Meanwhile, the surviving carriers fattened up on the carry-on and the failed and failing airlines. The Department of Transportation did little to stop the rush towards market consolidation or even slow it down. Former Transportation Secretary Elizabeth Dole and her successors never met an airline merger they did not like. Samuel Skinner, Transportation Secretary under President George H.W. Bush, stated there would still be competition even if the industry consolidated down to three major carriers. I was then and still am extremely fearful of a three-airline future. With only three major airlines, there would be an enormous incentive for each carrier to refrain from competing with the others at their strong hubs and routes. Their strategy would likely lead to the greatest mutual profitability, while strong competition across the board could prove suicidal to the airlines. Moreover, at each major carrier, as each major carrier became larger and stronger, it would become increasingly difficult for new competition to gain a foothold in a market. For example, Northwest operates major hubs at Detroit and Minneapolis. Not surprisingly, the airline's busiest route in terms of passenger carried is between these two markets. Delta's home hub is Atlanta. Its most popular route is Atlanta-Orlando. Although Delta does not dominate service into or out of Orlando International Airport the way at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson, the airline does dominate the Atlanta-Orlando route. And the Atlanta is the most popular point of origin of flights into Orlando. Does anyone believe a merged Northwest Delta airline would result in more competition, better service, and lower fares on such routes? I certainly do not. In 1998, we had the opportunity to preview airline consolidation when the General Accounting Office, now the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, examined the impact of proposals by six U.S. carriers to form three alliances. The GAO found that if all of the proposed alliances were implemented, competition could be reduced by 100 million passengers each year. In response, Congress gave DOT authority to review various aspects, such as frequent flyer programs, before an alliance could be implemented. By this action, Congress clearly expressed its interest in ensuring competition in the airline industry remain intact. 2 years later, United and U.S. Airways announced plans to merge. I called the Secretary of Transportation and the Assistant Attorney General to examine the merger vigorously, to look beyond the merger itself, and to consider the domino effect it would set in motion as other airlines sought to merge in order to compete. If the United-U.S. Airways deal had been approved, the government would have been hard-pressed to deny other airlines the same right to consolidate, and Sam Skinner's prediction of three major airlines would have come true. Moreover, while mergers may mean short-term profits for investors, the inevitable will mean long-term losses for workers and consumers. The merged carrier is never greater than the sum of its parts. It is always less, often much less. As the executive planning these mergers are polishing their golden parachutes, employees of the affected airlines are worrying about the potential loss of their pensions, their seniority, and even their jobs. It is not what we were promised when we deregulated the airline industry in 1978. If Transportation and Justice Department will not act to cool this merger mania, then Congress should. The Committee of Transportation and Infrastructure of the United States House of Representatives, which I have the honor to chair, stands ready to hold a hearing once a merger plan is announced to shine a bright light on the consolidation proposal for all to see. I and others in Congress also intend to use any tools at our disposal to prevent further consolidation. Thank you for holding this hearing and for allowing me to contribute to this important discussion.
Thank you very much. We want to talk for a minute about the Duluth agreements, and Peter Sawson, welcome to the committee, and let us know what's going on. Didn't Cirrus take over that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Peter Sawson from the Department of Finance, and if I just may for 1 second take a moment to do an introduction here. As some of you may know, I retired from state government last April and came back to work on a one-year half-time contract after that. And I want to introduce back here Kathy Cardell. Commissioner Hansen recently appointed her to my old position of Assistant Commissioner of Finance or Treasury. And I just wanted to make the committee aware of that. Kathy has no knowledge on the Northwest agreements, and I'm here to talk about them. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the state entered into agreements with Northwest Airlines for a maintenance facility at the Duluth Airport. Back in 1992, there were delays in getting it started for various reasons. The facility was built and completed in 1997. Northwest occupied it. There were public policy agreements that went along with the facility, including employment at Duluth of 350 jobs, which Northwest maintained, I believe, in the 2004. I believe the mechanics went on strike. Northwest closed the facility and it never reopened. Northwest went into bankruptcy in 2005, which put the at risk the payment of the bonds that the state had issued. In the bankruptcy process that Northwest entered, the state got an unsecured claim in the form of stock in the new Northwest Airlines. The state immediately sold the stock so we could get the value out of it, and there's sufficient money from that to pay off all the bonds that were outstanding. The facility was then owned by the Duluth Economic Development Authority, and recently DETA has entered in an agreement with Cirrus to rent at least a portion of the facility for the purposes of Cirrus at Duluth.
State got paid off on the bonds for that facility?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. At the time of of the payoff, there were just under $36 million of bonds outstanding, and the amount of the claim was sufficient to pay off all those bonds, plus some other costs related to the transaction.
So with interest and everything, they were completely
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Up to date. Okay.
That's correct. All the principal, all the interest was paid. There was, when Northwest first entered bankruptcy, there was a portion of the first debt service payments on the bonds that Northwest did not pay, and that also got paid off. So everybody that had an interest in the bonds, the payment of the bonds, which is the city of Duluth, St. Louis County, and the state, no one had to pay on debt service on those bonds.
All right. You're not up here for this issue, but how about the Chisholm? Was that the reservations, was that IRRRB money, and is that President Steedland told me the other day that I'll put it on the tape. He didn't say I couldn't say this, but he said that that's going to remain open no matter what happens. So that's good news. I think there's 74 or 80 employees up there. And I don't know, maybe Senator Tomasoni. I saw Bach was here for a minute, but how's your recollection?
The way that worked was the IRRRB built a building for Northwest Airlines at $9.7 million. And there were some covenants in the beginning for the first 550 people that were employed, and then some more after they hit 650. And to date, what has happened, long story short, what has happened, because of the level of employment that's there, they qualified for forgiveness about on $8.7 million of the $9.7 million, and they paid off the last million. And we have an agreement with them that they have to keep at least 300 people working there every year at a minimal annual average through 2015. And if it does drop below that 300 minimal annual average any time in the next years before 2015, the building will revert back to the IRRRB, and Northwest Airlines will be paying lease payments to continue the operation there.
So you were sounds like you and the other members of the IRRRB are comfortable at this point?
I think we're comfortable with what's gone on there so far.
So far.
We're obviously nervous about what might happen if there is a merger and whether or not those jobs will stay there. But we're hoping that my understanding is they got most of their World Perks people there and that they don't have – I think we have about 484 working there right now. So,
okay.
So there's a good number, and hopefully that stays that way or gets more. It goes higher, I mean.
I mentioned earlier about all of the jobs out in the district I represent, but also there's 1,050 jobs in Eagan, Minnesota, that's in – billing is in the district I'm the senator in, so that's another reason why I'm very concerned about this. Appreciate that. Any questions of – okay. Fine. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner McElroy.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoip.
I'm sorry to be a little late. I was looking down the financial assistance, and we've discussed the $47.6 million bonds for Duluth there and the 9.7. What about the MAC bonds? Are we going to have some conversation?
Yeah, we'll probably get a clarification on that, too, from the MAC people. That'll be up after Commissioner McElroy, so if we can hold off for a second on that. But Mr. McElroy, talk to us about the state involvement and what you see is going on and whatever you want to talk about. We got to get some good news out of something here.
Mr. Chairman,
it would be.
I wish I brought you good news. I bring you a lot of information, some of which adds complexity because this isn't a simple situation. The governor asked Jack Lanners, the chair of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and me to do our best to prepare for the state's role in an airline consolidation discussion involving Northwest, which has evolved to mean the negotiations that are reported between Northwest and Delta. At the time, we were asked to begin doing research, evaluating the state's protections in place, which are at the MAC. We didn't know if the discussions would move toward a Northwest Continental combination or a Northwest Delta or perhaps some other combination. But we've been trying to get as much information as possible. But before I begin, I should, on behalf of the governor, thank the leadership of both the House and the Senate for the bipartisan approach that's been taken to this issue. It was really gratifying to see the Senate Majority Leader and Minority Leader, the Speaker of the House and the House Minority Leader, stand up with the governor a week ago Thursday, and present a united front that we are deeply concerned. We are going to be cautious. We reserve the right to oppose or fight, quote, it. But we should know what it is before we announce that we're necessarily opposed to it. But we certainly have grave concerns. Northwest has taken the same approach, Mr. Chairman, with the governor's office that they've taken with you, and that is that they really can't talk to us substantively because of advice by their attorneys for a wide variety of reasons. I have provided in the packet that you have with a couple of 757s on the front of it copies of the letters that the governor has sent to the leadership. He's also of Northwest and Delta. He has had very short phone conversations with both Mr. Anderson and Mr. Steenland, apparently a little shorter than the one you had, Mr. Chairman, in which they have said they do care about the community, but they can't talk to him substantively because of concerns about ongoing negotiations and the SEC. With that, I'd like to provide some information, and it's on the first couple pages of the handout we provided. The question, how many employees does Northwest Airlines have in Minnesota, turns out to be a little more complicated than we might have thought it was. As part of the public policy covenants that Peter Sasson mentioned, Northwest reports to the MAC and the Commissioner of Finance annually on the number of employees they have in Minnesota. And when they did so in January, they reported the figure of 13,657 employees, including Northwest Airlines, MLT Vacations, Mesaba Aviation, Compass Airlines, and Pinnacle Airlines, which is the equivalent of about 46% of their 29,600 full-time equivalent employees, which we assume to be worldwide, although the covenant response didn't say that. It's possible that's in North America, but I think that's worldwide. That takes a little explanation. First of all, Pinnacle is a Northwest Airlines partner. They fly under the Northwest Airlink label. The last SEC filing we have indicates that Northwest is an 11% equity owner of Pinnacle. We believe MLT has about 500 employees. We're unclear from the filing as to how many employees Mesaba has. The MAC may have more information, or Northwest may be able to provide that at some point or willing to. We were unable to tell from the filings. We could tell from unemployment insurance information, but we're prohibited from using that from this purpose by the Data Practices Act, and so we didn't make that inquiry. Northwest attributes and there have been published accounts that Northwest, separate from its subsidiaries and affiliated companies, has 11,655 employees as of the end of 2007, of which the mayor of Eagan has opined that 2,200 of them are in the three buildings in Eagan. The three buildings in Eagan are the training center, Northwest NATCO, it's referred to, which I believe is an acronym for the National Airline Training Company, their data center, which is probably regarded as a strategic asset of the company, That location in Eagan is regarded as one of the best places in the country to operate a data center because it can get internet access from four different vendors at very high capacity, and it can get electrical service from the north, from Xcel, and from the south, from Great River. And so there are a number of large data centers in that location for companies like Thomson West and Unisys and Blue Cross Blue Shield and Northwest Airlines. Also from published accounts, we believe that there are in the vicinity of 1,000 to 1,100 employees that are identified as headquarters employees in areas like human resources, accounting, executive positions, technical and legal positions, but that's, an estimate by analysts. I should also say that we believe, based on the level of employment, that the economic impact of Northwestern Minnesota is in the range of $3.5 to $4 billion. Deed's Office of Economic Analysis has done that work. That's certainly a range, and that's about 1.3% of the state's gross domestic product. So they're a very significant player, but less than 10% of those employees, it appears from the best information we have available, are true headquarters employees. Probably the most important asset and the asset that takes the most employees is the hub at Minneapolis-St. Paul. And I'm sure you've read the same accounts that I have in the press and opinions by airline analysts, which you will also hear, I believe, from the Metropolitan Airports Commission, that for a wide variety of reasons, it's unlikely that the hub is at risk. It is centralized in North America. It's not central in the United States, but this is a North American market. It serves, with the advent of technology allowing polar routes both to Europe and Asia, Metropolitan Airports Commission has referred to MSP as the North Coast Gateway of North America. And so it is a relatively short route to most of Western Europe and Northern Asia. It also, and it surprised me to learn this, thinking of how often it is snowy here, but it is one of the most reliable large hubs in the northern United States because it's rarely fogged in or out, and it operates a larger percentage of the year than Milwaukee, Chicago, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Boston. So it is. It also has, in the bottom half of cost per in-plane passenger of large hubs in the United States, Northwest has about a 65% market share, the last published account, and it is regarded as a very profitable hub. Northwest operates 101 gates at MSP, and as you may recall, there is a plan in place that could allow the addition of additional gates at the Humphrey Terminal if expansion were part of a new airline's strategy for this large hub. In addition to the gates MSP, Northwest operates a maintenance base and support facilities in the Twin Cities, essentially line maintenance. It would be nice to be able to ask Northwest to what extent major maintenance is done here, but they have significant facilities. Some of those facilities operate on leased land, and at the conclusion of those leases, the facilities revert to the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and the MAC can provide the dates at which those reversions take place. One interesting issue is that Northwest's headquarters are located on a 160-acre site in Eagan, which provides significant expansion opportunities, while Delta's current headquarters is in an office building adjacent to Atlanta-Hartsfield Jackson Airport, which would be in the line of expansion when Hartsfield-Jackson expands. I'm not overly optimistic that an airline office building would be considered a strategic advantage because office space is not as difficult to replace as hubs or routes, but it is interesting that expansion is much easier at Minneapolis-St. Paul than it would be in Atlanta. We also note that Northwest historically has operated the largest cargo fleet in U.S. aviation. We are unclear, however, how that helps us because most of those aircraft operate out of the West Coast or Anchorage. We also should note that MLT and Mesaba and Compass are wholly owned subsidiaries, and that MLT is either among the largest or is the largest vacation wholesaler in the nation, and that Delta Dream Vacations is an essentially outsourced product. So this may be one synergy in a combination. The last two bullets on the first page were covered by Peter in much better detail than I can, and we'll just leave it there. The second page of the handout is a presentation I hope to be able to make someday to the airline or to the board of directors of New Airlines, Inc. Now, I should say, I don't know who Northwest might merge with or what they might elect to call the new airline, and I'm hoping So rather than guess and call it NorDelta or Del West or some other concoction, we're just thinking of it as New Airline Inc. But we hope to have the opportunity to persuade New Airline Inc. that Minneapolis-St. Paul is an outstanding place from which to operate a global company like an airline. And we've provided some of the information in this page that I hope someday to be able to present to the board of directors or the senior management of this new airline. You will recall that Minneapolis-St. Paul was named the best metropolitan area in the country in which to operate a large company by MarketWatch.com earlier this year. With Northwest, we have 20 of the Fortune 500 companies headquartered in Minneapolis-St. Paul and lead the nation in Fortune 500 companies per capita. We also lead the nation in Fortune 1,000 companies per capita. 7 of the 100 largest privately held companies in the country are in Minnesota. And I should clarify that those numbers I provided are for Minnesota. We have one Fortune 500 company that's in Minnesota but not in the Twin Cities, and that's Hormel in Austin. But Minneapolis-St. Paul, and I'm not going to go through all of the information on the second page, but we're hopeful to have the opportunity to make that pitch. We think Minneapolis-St. Paul is an outstanding place from which to run a global company, and that we'll have the opportunity, if Northwest, when we know what it is, and depending on the opportunities that the MAC leverage points give us to get to a negotiating table, that we'll have the opportunity to fight for jobs and economic activity. I should – one figure that we provided on the first page and that I neglected to repeat for the record – is that our estimate of the payroll and economic impact of the headquarters jobs alone is that if those headquarters jobs have an average payroll of $70,000, that the payroll would be $70 million, and that it would have an economic impact using a reasonable multiplier of about $300 million, or about in the range of 11 to 12% of the overall impact of the company, given the fact that headquarters jobs are 10 or 11% of the company's total employment in Minnesota. As I indicated, I provided copies of the two letters from the governor to Northwest and Delta for your information and for the public record. The last sheet in the packet is in response to issues raised by Senator Senjum and others who represent Greater Minnesota. I asked our staff to do an exhibit that shows departures from Greater Minnesota airports and airports that affect Greater Minnesota citizens. And they include in that Fargo, Grand Forks, Sioux Falls, and La Crosse. And even though they obviously aren't located in our state, they serve many citizens of our state. And what we have provided is the total number of enplaned passengers for the calendar year for a four quarters that ended at the end of the third quarter of 2007, because the fourth quarter of 2007 wasn't yet available from FAA and U.S. Department of Transportation records. The combination of Northwest, Pinnacle, and Mesaba we added together to call Northwest and Partner Share. And then the daily departing flights show the total Northwest, Pinnacle, and Mesaba and the Northwest and Partner Share of flights. I should indicate that two of the airports in Minnesota are covered under the Federal Essential Services Act. Those are Thief River Falls, whose contract expires at the end of April 2009, and Hibbing Chisholm, whose contract expires in November 2009, both of which are subject to the renewal of that act by the current Congress. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have. I've intentionally left all the issues involving the Metropolitan Airports Commission for Mr. Lanners and his staff.
Questions of Senator Koch.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner McElroy, for coming today and explaining this to us. This question is maybe something that you're not familiar with, but I thought maybe of this list you're the best to ask. I have a constituent that has contacted me, actually, and I see him in the audience today, about the Champion Air. And are you familiar with Champion Air? They fly my understanding is they've flown MLT flights, and there's some jobs there that are on the line with this. And could you tell me what you know about the situation or any comments on that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Koch, I'm not qualified to talk on that. I know that it's a complex situation involving their contracts with the NBA and other sports teams. And so rather than guess, perhaps the chairman would like to invite Champions Management to testify, or your constituent may have more information, but we haven't been involved. At one time, the state held as collateral a note between Northwest and Champion Air when Northwest sold its stake. But with the payoff of those bonds last year, the state no longer has any interest in Champion. And I haven't been involved or followed that issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Mac might know that too, though.
It's entirely possible, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman. Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, Commissioner, I appreciate the outline of the benefits of the Northwest Airlines to the state, because we're all pretty well aware of how important a big airlines like this is. Do you have a feel? Senator Metzen earlier mentioned the 2,300 employees that are in his district. Do you have a feel for what might happen to these employees if there is a merger between the two airlines?
Mr. Chairman,
Roy.
We have an idea, but we also hope to have a chance to fight for more. But we think the employees that are at risk are those that are in the pure headquarters functions. We hope that ideas like expanding MLT to include Delta Dream Vacations, or perhaps headquartering the commuter operation here, or headquartering an expanded freight operation here, might save all the jobs. But we think the jobs that are most at risk are that 1,000 to 1,100 jobs that are in more pure headquarters functions in Eagan. We're hopeful that the data center is not at risk, because it's regarded as a strategic asset, a near strategic asset. We also understand NATCO is regarded, their National Airlines Training Company, as one of the best training providers, and having an inventory of simulators that would be useful both to the new airline, and they sell training to other companies. So we're hopeful that the NATCO jobs are not at risk. But it will be easier once we know kind of what it is to comment more fully, and hopefully to have some opportunity to negotiate with New Airline Inc.
I think Tomasoni is exactly right, though, in the executive office people. I mean, they're not going to double their staff in Atlanta, and those 1,200 are gone. There's no argument about that in my judgment. And again, I would guess 600-700 live out in Senator Carlson and the district I represent out there. And that really hurts. 25 years ago, not unlike the Iron Range, South St. Paul lost 7,000 union employees when Swift and Armors left our community. And boy, we're still fighting back 25, 30 years later. And hopefully maybe the range is coming back a little bit now, too, with some of the stuff. So I guess I get a little emotional when I went through all of that. And my uncle's, and I think maybe Governor Plenty's father probably
Governor
got laid
Plenty's
off at the time.
Governor Plenty's father did, too, Mr. Chairman.
So it's still, even though it was 25, 30 years ago, it's near and dear to my heart, and I empathize with these folks. We know they're going, Senator Tomasoni, the executive office people. And
Mr. Chairman, I think that
how many more are going? How many mechanics are going? How many ancillary jobs are going to be shipped down? We don't know those things. And that's
Mr. Chairman,
exterior, I
think, we want to fight for as many of those jobs as we can.
It sounds like you've got a plan and you're working hard at it, Commissioner, and I applaud you for that. But
all right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, then we're going to hear from Mac for a bit. Maybe I think what I'd some of us would like to hear about is the contractual stuff, and like we mentioned at the onset of the meeting, we're kind of a two-way street, but where Mac and the state stepped forward in 92 with the tune of about $780 million, and we were there for them. And here we are today. So thank you for coming, Jack Lanners, the chairman, and understand the executive director was called out of town somewhere or something, but Tommy Anderson is here too. Welcome. You may proceed.
Yes, thank you. Jack Lanners. I'm the chairman of the Metropolitan Airport Commission, and Senator Metzen, committee members, Senator Salzman, my senator, who's been quite diligent in a quick study, I might add. Thank you for allowing us to attend this committee hearing and provide some information as to the actions of the MAC over the last 2 to 3 years, probably, that really do flow into the potentialities of this issue. And I would probably begin with the issues that we've dealt with and how we arrived at some of the position that we're in today relative to the hub airport and the MAC itself. Dealing with bankruptcy issues led us to protect some of the loans and some of the obligations to the state from the airlines and a renegotiation of the airline lease agreements. This accomplished a number of goals and objectives for the airport and for the state, I believe, in setting the hub up as a more competitive airport across the country. This is a good thing. It provided some benefits to all airlines that operate out of MSP, at the same time as resolving some lease issues, providing concession incentives for money spent by all the goers at the airport between the MAC and the airlines, which makes more of a partnership relative to those items, and lowered the general overall costs of the airport to all airlines that operate out of the airport. This put us in the bottom half of large hub airports and effectively set us up as a competitive option for airlines across the country. Now, we have had quite a number of new entrant carriers over the last number of years. Some have disappeared, some new ones come. We have had growth and development of airlines at the airport, AirTran, Sun Country, that combined all non-Northwest airline-affiliated airlines account for in the neighborhood of 43% of all operations passengers out of the airport. That's probably at a high, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. However, we do rely strongly on the hubbing activities of Northwest Airlines for emplaned passengers that are connecting passengers that help provide significant revenues for the operation of the airport through passenger facility charges, time spent at the airport, et cetera. It also opens up the avenues for many, many destinations that we otherwise may not have without a hubbing connecting airport as we do. So those were the considerations as we went through that process a couple of years ago, and looking forward, setting up the airport as a competitive airport for the future, that in the event of mergers or acquisitions would put the airport and our operation in the state in a good light and a good position to compete with other cities, airports, or hubs. At the same time, we did tighten up the language and protect the loans that have been made to the airlines years ago that continue to be repaid and, I believe, actualize themselves in about 2022. That's the amortization schedule that I believe they're on. If the headquarters moves, is relocated, and I believe we provided this information at your desk there, then there's an acceleration of those payments that we could require once that occurs. There's also requirements for hubbing activity, that if hubbing activity were to fall below a certain level, those caveats also would come into play. We also tied in the concessions revenue sharing aspects and some lease reductions that we made through the bankruptcy process. Those could be taken away and or retracted in the event of either of those cases also. We also accomplished quite a number of other goals and objectives. We negotiated an agreement to buy out all of the jet bridges. The jet bridges doesn't sound like a big issue to most people, but in the advent of any reduction or opening of gates, if you don't own the jet bridges, it's difficult to bring in any other carriers or any other planes to those gates without a jet bridge. So it makes a turnaround time much more rapid. We also consolidated short-term gates at the airport, which short-term gates are gates that the MAC has the right, if there is a need that arises, to take control of from Northwest Airlines or affiliates and utilize a new entrant carrier at those gates. Those were scattered around the various terminals at the airport. We now have those consolidated on the D-pod, which, if you use the airport, is a very convenient location on the right-hand side after you go through security. It's very close, and we call it a pod because there's just six gates right there, and that's it. We can take those back if there is a driving need or a new entrant carrier wishes to enter MSP. So there were a lot of things that were accomplished. We protected the loans to the best of our abilities and also provided the incentives for new entrant carriers and for Northwest Airlines to grow, expand as a hub at our airport. That said, we feel we're sitting in a good position as an airport, as a top-rated functional airport in the country, one of the top operationally, and one of the lower-cost airports. Other things that we've done, really, I don't want to go on for a long time, but would rather stand for questions that you might have. I might...
That'd be all right, but can we hear, maybe we could talk about those covenants a little bit.
Certainly.
I'm kind of interested in that. I don't know. I suppose it's all public information, so...
Certainly is, Mr.
How strong are some of these things? What do we have, a little or a lot of leverage? One statement says something like, airline hereby covenants and agrees to maintain its headquarters in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area and to maintain a hub. It says both in this one. No, I don't know if that... I mean, that looks pretty clear to me that maybe one of the covenants is that... Maybe it goes on to say something else, but
Senator,
anyway...
if you would like, I'll have our general counsel, who I prefer not to leave home without, give a brief explanation of those covenants.
I think that'd be beneficial to the committee to...
Mr. Chair, thank you. You have before you in our materials copies of the two sets of covenants. There are those that were negotiated in 1991 as part of the so-called state financing package, and those covenants carry forward and are in effect today. And then, as Chair Lanners just mentioned to you, there's a separate set of covenants that were negotiated last year in 2007 as part of the Northwest Airlines bankruptcy and lease renegotiation. So two sets of covenants, and let me walk through each of them because they overlap each other. The 1991 covenants were negotiated on behalf of both the state and MAC, and there are, for these purposes, I think, three important covenants: a hub covenant, a headquarters covenant, and an overall Minnesota employment covenant. And I've listed the specifics of those in the materials that you have. The hub covenant simply defines a number of flights and a number of connecting passengers that have to be operating out of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. The headquarters covenant says the headquarters has to stay in the Twin Cities, or in the state, actually. And the overall employment covenant sets a level of employment that is required to be maintained in the state. Now, the issue is what happens if those covenants are not met, and there's a detailed set of provisions that say what will happen if those commitments aren't maintained. And they basically involve an accelerated payment of the financing that MAC made to Northwest Airlines. It's when it was originally done in 1992, it was $315 million of financing that was provided to Northwest, a $270 million bond issue where we have to repay bondholders. We sold bonds, took the proceeds from those bonds and used those to fund, to make payments to Northwest. And then Northwest is repaying that money to us with interest, and then we in turn make sure that the bondholders are paid. So MAC is not profiting from this, but it is simply acting as the go-between between Northwest, who's making the payments, and then we're taking the money that they pay us and paying the bondholders. So those bonds are outstanding. They've been refinanced. They were refinanced in 2002 to take advantage of better market conditions. But we still have outstanding bonds of about $245 million of outstanding principal, and Northwest has continued, and since 1992 has made every payment that's been required of it under the leases that we have with Northwest. The consequence of they're not living up with these covenants is that they have to make those payments quicker to us. So right now, the payments don't have to be amortized, as the chair indicated, until 2022. If they were to violate any of these covenants, there is a required acceleration of payments. And it's, I can go through the specifics. It's fairly complicated. But the point is, the consequence is accelerated payment for a violation of any of those covenants.
I would like to point out that through the bankruptcy, these are potential items that could have been rejected and created some significant problems, not only for the airport, but for the state, with ramifications, of course, to the airlines. They weren't. They were accepted, and that's a good thing. They have Northwest Airlines has not been out of bankruptcy all that long, and they knowingly and full well accepted the obligations of these bond payments, along with extension of their lease through 2020. That's a good thing also. That means the 101 gates that they occupy, they're obligated to pay lease payments through 2020. So the loans have provided not only significant growth and expansion of the airport and have provided many jobs in the airport and around the airport, but they have shown every intent of living up to these obligations. So while there are arrows in our quiver that get us to the table if a potential, if a merger announcement is made, we'll be there, and we have those with the goal and objective, as Commissioner McElroy said, accomplishing the best future outlook for the state that we can obtain.
Another major concession that the state or the MAC made to the Northwest Airlines is the rent reductions of between $15 and $18 million a year that go to 2020. What covenants are, how do we get paid for, you know, for giving them that break, major break of $15 to $18 million a year for the year 2020?
First of all, if I could,
any of that
Mr. Chair,
being paid back then? Or?
Those were negotiated as part of the bankruptcy negotiations, and it was complex negotiation, not just with Northwest, but with all the airlines, because we have to treat them all sort of the same. And but we clearly had the issue of the Northwest, the specific issues with Northwest. So yes, there were rent reductions that were agreed to as part of the Northwest bankruptcy. Some of those reductions were contingent on their maintaining a hub and headquarters in the state. And so in addition to the 1991 covenants that I was just talking about, there are these now 2007 covenants that were just negotiated last year that also define a headquarters, actually tighten up the definition of headquarters, also define a hub, tighten up the definition of hub. And I haven't mentioned it before, but there's a force majeure provision, which some of you may be familiar with in general terms. It says under what circumstances do you let someone out of these obligations. Northwest has taken advantage of the force majeure provision, for example, in the 1991 covenants by saying overall economic conditions have not permitted them to maintain employment levels. And the commitment from them was that if they were going to make reductions, they had to make them uniform. So they, and in fact, they represented us, and we believe that they did throughout the early 2000s when they began breaching this covenant, have a valid point and met the requirements of the covenants, because any reductions here were comparable to reductions that they were making in other parts of the country. That obviously is not the situation if they're voluntarily shutting down a headquarters in the Twin Cities and moving those jobs somewhere else, and I would expect that we would look very closely at any actions that they took and whether they had satisfied their obligations under that force majeure provision if they were simply shutting down operations here so they could move them somewhere else. That hasn't been the case so far. Any reductions that they've made so far have simply been because of the horrible economic condition of the airline industry and the required response that they've had to make throughout their system. So we do have these other covenants. They are tied, as we indicated in our papers, in two ways to maintain maintenance of the hub and headquarters. One is we share some of our concession revenue with the airlines, and that revenue sharing, which is about 7% of our overall airport concessions, parking and retail and so on, that would go away if Northwest did not maintain its hub and headquarters in the Twin Cities.
Headquarters?
Hub and headquarters in the state. And then secondly, if you know the airport, the old Republic main base on 494, which is where most of Northwest's maintenance now takes place,
also got the benefit of a significant rent reduction of about $1.9 million a year throughout the term of that lease, which goes through 2020. And we tied that rent reduction to the maintenance of a hub and headquarters in the state. So those are the tools that I believe we have available to us in any discussions with Northwest about these issues.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lanners and Mr. Anderson. For either of you, I recognize this is a hypothetical situation, and we're all discussing ifs, but help me with the numbers and the calculations here if you can. If Northwest or the surviving merged airline wants to relieve itself or walk away from the current obligations at MSP, how big a check do they have to write to the state? Is that clear? In other words, what do they have to do to get out of this?
They'd have extreme difficulty walking away from their leases, lease agreements of the 101 gates. They would have difficulty walking away from their other leases. Realistically, to do those types of things, they would have to refile bankruptcy. So it strictly becomes the concessions and revenue sharing portions, the lease reductions that were applied through the agreements and
the bonds.
The bonds.
$700 million total?
The bonds, Mr. Anderson was filling you in on, I think that if they did walk away from those, it's a 3 to 5 year, 3 to 4 year immediate payback is the acceleration that we could impose.
On $245 million of principal.
Plus. So there's interest.
Does that include?
Well, they don't write a check for the concessions. That
we don't want their check. We want them to stay here and
exactly
keep their hub here.
Mr.
And
Chair, just to follow up, I appreciate that. We want them to stay here. I'm just trying to figure out how much leverage we actually have in a multi-billion-dollar transaction.
Well, when you add it up, $245 million of bonds, $20 billion merger is not a lot, but it's certainly significant. Even if it's over 3 years or so, it doesn't mean that it couldn't be refinanced by the merged company or taken care of in other ways. Similarly, the concessions is a loss. It's an annual loss that's rebated at the end of the year if and only if each and every airline that operates out of the airport is fully paid up, current with the MAC, operating in good standing, they will receive their portion of the concessions and other rebates. So those would and could go away.
You know, somebody mentioned competition, but, boy, I don't see it. I mean, you have a big merged airline like this with 80-85% of the market, then the little guy comes in for 4.5 weeks and match their rates or cut them in half, then they're out, aren't they? I mean, that's economics 101, I think, so I'm scared to death, obviously, of this whole thing, but... How are you going to get competition in here with a giant? And the little guy comes in and cuts the rate to 180, and the big one will say, well, 160 for about a year, and then the little guy's gone. Isn't that how it works? I think I do a little work in the business community, so it scares the dickens out of me. Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am very concerned about the impact of the job loss, but also the impact on the MAC employees. I presume that the revenue that MAC receives from the people who go through our hub is a big part of your concessions, and if these routes end up changing, we don't know the impact of that. And it occurs to me that Detroit is also going to be in a similar situation as we are, negotiating with Northwest Airlines because of the expansion that they've made at their airport and the commitment that they've made to the Northwest Airlines situation. And I know that the former governor of Michigan is now on their board, and so I'm sure he's got some clout with regard to the negotiations. I'm wondering if you could comment on that. Do you feel like that Detroit will have any significant advantage in any way of getting more of the hub business than Minneapolis-St. Paul? And what's your sense of this negotiation?
I don't know if you...
That's a tough one.
Take a shot at that or not.
Detroit's a different deal. Location comes into play, without a doubt, and where they're hubbing or operating to and from. And that's not going to change. We're here and they're there. We can't change that. What we can do is be competitive. And with the rates and charges that we had going to airlines a couple years ago and the way they were headed, we were jumping up into the upper half of costs at large hub airports. And while being a top-rated functional airport, it's not necessarily a place we want to be, as in the higher cost end of it. And so we were able to restructure things, keep our bond ratings, and stay financially sound while resolving some significant and having the best noise mitigation program in the country. And that puts us in a good position. That locking up with the money that's owed to us, along with providing the concession rebates, we feel we've done a lot to position the airport and thereby the state to maintain and retain and hopefully grow as many jobs as possible. We're in a good position as a hub. For a couple years, we've had studies done by professionals across the country and updated recently relative to different merger potentials, mm-hmm. Planning ahead. And it's a good position to know what the different options could be in one of the what-if, some of the what-if scenarios. And when we look at it, some of the least overlap for us here. Nationally, the Justice Department will be looking into those issues and antitrust and those types of things. But from Minnesota and MSP's position, Delta is one of the better choices if a merger were to occur for overlap. There is not a lot of overlap, and it also positions MSP in the state as one of the westernmost major hub, which for the long term may not be a bad thing. So when they come out, or if they come out with a merged entity, that's what we'll need to look at, is what are their plans now and into the future.
Senator Saltzman.
About, I think last October, Mr. Chair, the Transportation Committee had a chance to tour the airport, and it was just fascinating to be able to see behind the scenes. And the one thing I think all of us are very proud of is that as we travel around, we come home, and it's such a wonderful airport. I mean, in terms of the amenities and the way it has been cared for. And I think we've talked a lot today about the jobs in terms of job loss. But being on this committee as well, I think we need to look at this as how will this impact the business climate in Minnesota to make sure that we have a hub, to make sure that we're able, that, you know, companies coming here see that they have access. So regardless of what happens, I think whatever this committee can do or else the legislature to ensure that there is a strong hub here in the future is absolutely central to Minnesota's economy. Certainly the jobs are one piece of it, but ensuring that new jobs also grow here is also very, very important. So I want to thank you for the work that you do and always stay in touch.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, and I too echo what a wonderful job MAC does running your airport. I think you guys have done absolutely wonderful, and Senator Scheid and I were just talking. I can remember, and I think if I remember right, and I don't know if the chairman was here when we had our 91. That was quite a loan deal that we put together. Yeah. And I actually opposed it, so I can remember that was quite a time in my. I guess what I'm wondering is, when you're all together, what does MAC look and say? You know, this could be good for the state. Or does MAC feel that the merger wouldn't be good for the state? Is there a feeling that you have on your board?
Senator,
somebody running around southern Minnesota talking, and my constituents are pretty, they're quite nervous about this. And I think most of them are, they like Northwest Airlines, and they think they've done a wonderful job for the state, as I do. And I think they're all nervous that, you know, if something does happen, even more so than the hub, some people are saying, you know what, maybe that opens up other airlines, and maybe in the overall it will actually would be good for us. So I just, you know, you don't have to answer that if you don't know or if you haven't talked about it, but I...
Well, I would like to answer it to the extent that we're neither in favor of it nor against it at this point, in all honesty, and I say that with all due respect and seriousness. Crystal balls are hard to come by. That's my humor. Don't take any offense to it. It's a difficult situation, and we are very concerned about the whole situation, very concerned. And we will be until we see what comes out and may be even more concerned. So time will tell, but we do know that it could be good or it could be bad. We also know that a non-merger may be okay. It also could lead to liquidation of an airline down the road somewhere. That would be bad. So it's difficult, and we're very concerned.
Mr. Chairman, that's a good answer. I've used that a few times myself, and sometimes, you know, you know, your friends are against and for things, and you sometimes then say you're for your friends, and, you know, that's...
Yeah. Well, that's why we're here. You know, we're here to learn. We're not... And as the weeks go on now, I think the parts of the puzzle will probably come more together, and we'll have some of these answers, and you don't have them yet, and we certainly don't have them, and except that you might be able to go to South America from here.
Mr. Chairman.
Right?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
These little subtle jokes, nobody laughs anyway. But Tomasoni, Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, Mr. Anderson,
Eric Cook, thank you.
Mr. Anderson, I think I heard you say that one of the covenants is related to jobs provided by the airlines. Does the 1,100 jobs that Senator Metzen might be losing rise to the level of requiring acceleration of payment of the bond? I mean, how many jobs do we have to lose in order for the payback to be accelerated?
Northwest has to report, Mr. Chair, every year on their employment level, and they just did it at the end of January of this year. So they'll have to report next January what their overall employment level is as of the end of 2008. And depending on how far that is below the required level, you would then go back into the agreements and figure out what percentage that is and begin to figure out. So I'd have to do the math. Unfortunately, I can't do it right off the top of my head. But if you assumed it was 1,100 off of the current level, we can figure that out and provide it to you just to give you an illustration of what it would be. But it's this negotiation was about as complex a negotiation as anything I've ever seen. Those of you who may have been involved back then might remember it. It's just buried in the details of that agreement.
And Mr. Chairman, if I'm understanding you correctly, the bigger the difference, the faster the payback. Is that
correct? At some point, it's all required to be paid back within a year or two. But there's a partial based on essentially the percentage that you are off the required level.
Okay. That's true, too.
Loose concessions? Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Lanners, you mentioned the overlap or the overlay of routing between Delta and Northwest. Is there a potential that would cause a greater incidence of hub activities here? And I guess I have a couple of questions related to that. Do you have a feel for how many departures and arrivals are from Delta today? And also the breakdown between MSP as being a destination and origin versus a pass-through?
Yeah, let me do the O&D business. 57% of origination and destination in 07 was carried by Northwest Airlines or its affiliates. That's probably one of the lowest percentages we've had. Now, I don't have history on that, but at 57% O&D traffic, including Mesaba and its affiliates. The other question, I believe Delta has three gates.
They have three gates. There's between Delta and their regional affiliate, they have about just under 1.5% of passengers. They fly to Salt Lake and Cincinnati out of the Twin Cities. So those are the routes where there's where there would be a loss of competition, just those two market pairs.
Salt Lake and Cincinnati, which are two Delta hubs.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Lanners also lost some of my train of thought here, but wanted to ask a little bit more about the obligations. Are you obligated to continue with the assignment of gates to Northwest if they would be moving away, or if there was some change where they would move either the headquarters or the hub or both, such that some competitive airlines could come into those same gates?
Well, that's a good question. The 2020 plan for the airport, which is currently on hold due to the uncertainties in the industry and lack of commitments that we have from airlines to utilize additional gates, we do have the ability to quite rapidly expand the Humphrey Terminal from 10 gates to as many as 29 gates. That would create a lot of activity. So we do have the capabilities for any new entrant carriers really right now. We also have the capability currently to acquire what we call short-term gates at the Lindbergh Terminal for use also if we had a need.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Landers, one more question about operations too. Does the MAC participate in the fuel supplying activities at MSP to Northwest?
Mr. Chair, we've built the infrastructure, and that's operated completely by the airlines.
Operated and owned? Owned also?
Owned. For environmental purposes, yes, it's owned by the airlines.
Okay. Thank you.
That's not a, yeah, you have a direct, somebody has a direct pipeline from Flint Hills over to the airport, too.
Yes.
Which is close to our district, too, Mr. Carlson. I don't know if that would be affected or not. But there's been a, I don't know who pays for this kind of stuff, but there's been a extension of unemployment benefits to some of these folks and the job training stuff. And I'm not sure how those formulas work, but I know the state has been there to come in and help out in that area, too. So how that fits in, I think it all fits in, that we've been good, too, to Northwest. But there's a lot more rocks to turn over and things to talk about. We're not done talking about it, but I thought this was kind of a good start. But any further questions of the MAC folks at this time? We could always get you back, of course. The young man, the pilot, did you wish to, or anybody in the audience wish to, we've got probably another 5-10 minutes if there's something compelling or not even compelling. It doesn't have to be compelling. Did you want to say something? You don't get many chances around here. Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much. Again, this is work in progress. This is by no means the last meeting on this very important issue for the citizens of Minnesota. Any further announcements? Well, you did want to come out there. I like that tie. Was that glow in the dark? That's pretty good stuff there, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Yeah. My name is Matt Marsh. I am a pilot at Champion Air, and we operate out of Minneapolis. We operate primarily for MLT, doing about 70% of our business for MLT. The pilots of Champion Air, I'm also the MEC chairman, which is the head of our pilot union, and the pilots of Champion Air are very concerned about our future. We were told that our future is in jeopardy. We were told that Champion could be ending our operations later this year, and we are directly tied to Northwest Airlines through the MLT piece. We are also a privately held company, so we're not very familiar with the actual ownership of the airline. I've been told that there is, through the testimony today and then also in the past, I've been told that there was a loan that the state of Minnesota had with Northwest Airlines. And we're very interested in having Northwest Airlines answer some questions of if they would be interested in allowing pilots of Champion Air to transfer over to Northwest Airlines in the event that the operations of Champion Air ceases. And we have begun those conversations through the two pilot unions of Champion Air, represented by the Airline Pilots Association, and also the pilots of Northwest Airlines that are also represented by the Airline Pilots Association. We believe that a transfer of pilots from Champion Air to Northwest Airlines can be conducted and should be done because of our dedicated service to our airline and the dedicated service that Champion Air has provided to Northwest Airlines. And we're very interested in these proceedings. We're very interested in the future of Northwest Airlines. And I just want to say that I personally have a long history with Northwest Airlines. My grandfather started at Northwest Airlines in 1943. His brother started at Northwest Airlines in 1948. My father started at Northwest Airlines in 1964, all three of them serving as pilots for their entire careers. So my family has a lot of history at Northwest Airlines. We're very concerned about it. And also being a resident of Minnesota, I'm very concerned. So thank you very much for all the hard work you all put in, and I look forward to these proceedings.
Aren't you glad you spoke up? That's good. That was a good testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, Mr. Chairman, let me ask a question.
Senator Lavasotti, sir, Mr. Pilot, you might not be done yet.
Mr. Marsh.
Senator Tomasoni.
Maybe I missed maybe you explained it in your, why would Northwest Airlines feel any obligation to show any preference to the pilots of Champion Airline?
Well, like I said, the ownership structure of Champion Air is not real clear. In 1997, Northwest Airlines and Carl Pohlad purchased Northwest Airline or Champion Air from a local businessman, Dick Page, and there was a ownership from the spring of 97 until 2003. At that point, I'm not real clear as to the ownership structure, but there was clearly financial backing by Northwest Airlines for Champion Air, and it was utilized in the bankruptcy hearings. Our pilot union has reason to believe that Northwest Airlines has been controlling the operation at Champion Air, and we believe that based on that control and potentially a significant ownership, whether it not be direct or whether it just be as a debtor in possession ownership, that we feel that Northwest Airlines should feel an obligation and take care of the employees of Champion Air, and most specifically for my group, the pilots of Champion Air.
There's probably a way to figure out, isn't there, ownership of these things through the Secretary of State or somehow, some way? I bet Northwest has a 10, 12. I don't know what they have. They might have a percentage of the. I don't know. We'll look into it.
We were told that the ownership is by five executives of the airline, that there was a purchase of the airline in 2003, and four of those five executives have left the airline. There's only one remaining. The others have left the industry or gone to different competitors.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Marsh, would you ultimately become members of the Northwest Airlines Pilot Union, or would there be an issue as to who gets paid what?
We have asked in a request to the Northwest Pilot, their Master Executive Council, we asked them to pass a resolution that allowed, that engaged their negotiating committee with Northwest Management to transfer the pilots. We would then transfer from Champion Air as new hire pilots at Northwest Airlines. We would not come over with any seniority. We're not asking for additional pay. We're just saying starting as a new hire pilot. And I do have to say that Northwest Airlines is currently hiring pilots and is in need of pilots. So both airlines, as I said, are represented by the Airline Pilots Association, so there would be no conflict there. Both pilot groups are in favor of this. And we do not have any conflicts with their pilot group and are fully supportive of them.
Okay. If that doesn't, anybody else wish to be heard? Going once?
Okay. Thank you.
Wednesday, we meet again at 12:30. Thank you for your attention. We had a full house here for our committee members, which is very good. Meeting's adjourned.